So John says to Jesus, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and he wasn't one of us." So we told him to stop what he was doing, but Jesus turned to him and said, "You shouldn't have done that. Anyone using my name to do a miracle can't turn quickly and speak evil about me in the same breath. Anyone who isn't against us is for us. But the truth is this. Anybody who gives you a cup of cool water because you carry the name of Christ will be rewarded. Us and them." I may have shared this story one time. But I remember when I was a kid. My mom was an elementary school teacher. It's kind of funny, I ended up marrying one. And I used to go into school with my mom in the morning. And this is kind of funny because it's actually what Charlotte has done because she attends the same school that my wife teaches at. So when I was a kid, I would go into school with mom in the morning, and I just figured that every kid did this. It just seemed normal because it was the only reality that I knew at the time. I never had to take the bus or anything like that. And when I was in with mom, we would get to kind of sneak over to the neighboring teacher's classroom because that was actually my homeroom. And as a second grader, I would just waltz over there in the morning and sit down and hang out at my desk and just be ready for the day. And it wasn't a big deal because this neighboring teacher, the homeroom teacher, was a family friend, and she kind of had this trusting nature about her, and she let other students do the same thing. Her son was also a student of hers. So lots of kids were in the classroom in the morning when the teacher wasn't necessarily in there. We used to do this. Used to is the key phrase. She had this aquarium in her room, I recall, this homeroom teacher. And in it, there was this large goldfish. And she used to let us feed that goldfish. But one morning, two students, one of which was her son, thought it would be a good idea to feed the goldfish some of these little counting bears. You remember these things? They teach kids how to count. I think the ones we had were red. But he decided, oh, it might not be a bad idea to feed this goldfish some counting bears. Maybe it was an exercise in physics or biology or something like that. But these figurines were little plastic bears, and they were held in this large glass jar. And when the teacher came into the classroom, she caught her son red-handed, hand in the jar, startled him, and he dropped it on the ground, and it shattered everywhere. Shattered everywhere. Although I was not directly involved in this situation, if you will, I was in the classroom when it happened. And it came time for everybody to fess up whose idea it was to feed the goldfish, the counting bears. And it wasn't my idea. But what do? When you don't want to be associated with somebody that's doing something stupid, what do? You pretend that you like live in a vacuum or a bubble. You might look down at your feet. You might try to act like you're invisible or something like that. You do anything you can in your power to be different than the guilty party. I know a couple of us looked down. A couple of us kind of acted like we were studying or scribbling or doing something at our desks. But it didn't matter. We all got in trouble anyways. And we weren't able to go back into the classroom in the morning anymore. The point is this. Those of us that weren't involved in the situation, we didn't want to be identified with those kids that were misbehaving, the ones that were feeding the goldfish the counting bears. So what did we do? We set up sort of a barrier between us and them. I was a good kid. I was at my desk. I was doing this. I didn't do anything wrong. They were bad. They were doing what they weren't supposed to be doing. They were out of their seat. We decided that we were good and they were bad. We distanced ourselves from those other children in that moment. In a matter of speaking, we might as well have said, "Teacher, these kids weren't doing something they're supposed to be doing. We tried to stop them, but they didn't listen. They weren't with us, the good kids. That's them, not us." I mentioned this story this morning because in our reading from Mark's gospel today, it kind of sounds like the disciples were trying to distance themselves from this person that wasn't one of them. But he was doing things that they were doing. They set themselves up kind of as the good guys in this scenario, and this other person as the bad guy, because he wasn't one of them, but he was still doing the things that they do. "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name. We tried to stop him. He wasn't following us," said John. It kind of sounds like, in a way, they didn't want to be associated with this person because they were part of the inner circle, the 12. And this guy who was casting out the demons wasn't even mentioned by name. I think this gets at the heart of the gospel lesson this morning, because I think that heart has to do with identity. The way the disciples identify themselves, the way that we as disciples identify ourselves. Jesus invites us, I think, not of saying us and them and us. He invites us into another way of thinking about our identity. And I think in this day and age when we're in a very polarized climate, this is a really healthy way of thinking, the way that he invites us to talk about identity. So this morning I want to talk a little bit about identity. Here's a question for you. And I'm kind of curious how you might begin it. And maybe it's one that you can think about this week as you face out into the world. Who are you? Seriously, who are you? How do you start your story when you're introducing yourself to somebody for the first time? And then maybe think about how you arrived at that answer. Where do you begin when you tell your story? And what defines you as a human being? Is it your accomplishments, your history, the stuff that's hanging on your wall? Are they the experiences you've had, the big life mile markers? Are you identified by your relationships with people? Or some mix of all of these things? Maybe it's not a one or the other, but a yes and. At first glance, I think our reading from Mark appears to be Jesus saying, "Hey, lighten up, guys. Stop worrying about the other people that are following me. Focus on what matters more, like avoiding all these things that are going to send you to hell in a handbasket." But I think there's really something to identity, so I want to tell you about that. When the disciples say, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he wasn't following us," in a way, it seems like they're trying to get Jesus to affirm their judgment and their action against this other person, this other follower, because he wasn't playing by their rules, and he wasn't one of them, one of the 12. And in a way, they had decided who was a disciple and who was not by defining themselves over and against this other person. "We are here with you, Jesus. This guy is not one of the 12. Therefore, he is not one of us. He's somebody else." The disciples were the leaders in a way. They were this inner circle. In some ways, they probably thought other people should probably be listening to them. They might have some authority. They're the ones that are walking and talking and eating and hanging out with Jesus. So when somebody else is doing the stuff that they think perhaps that only they are authorized to do, it is offensive to them. "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name and we tried to stop him because he wasn't following us." It seems that might mean the disciples thought that they were a closed group, a closed system, an in-crowd crowd. 12 has a good ring to it, right? Nobody else can be a disciple. I don't think that's how God operates. The response of Jesus to them is, "Do not stop him. Whoever is not against us is for us." I think by this, what Jesus is saying is that no, the doors of discipleship are not shut. The system isn't closed. This group is not by invitation only. You don't define yourself as a disciple by being in proximity to me, by touching me, being at my left or my right-hand side, by eating at the same table as me. You identify yourself in a different way. By doing small, bold acts of welcome. Like giving somebody a glass of water. By caring for the vulnerable. By avoiding the things that are destructive to the self or to your neighbor or to the community you live in or the world. You do acts in my name, but you should be acting because of my life. I think Jesus is saying that it is too easy to define ourselves on the backs of the people around us by contrasting ourselves with others rather than coming alongside them as brothers and sisters. It's kind of funny, you can walk in any direction around here, and it goes, bar, church, bar, church, bar, church. I've noticed that ever since moving to Milwaukee. It's not unique, necessarily, to Wisconsin, but it is funny. And in many ways, our denominations really are not all that different. But you still hear people talk about the Lutherans and the Methodists. And I'm not saying all that needs to congeal into one thing, but we oftentimes define ourselves by what we are not, instead of walking alongside other people, especially Christians. And you barely have to turn your TV on or listen to the radio for 2 seconds these days to hear people defining themselves because of what? Because of political stuff. They're defining themselves against their opponents or other candidates by who they are and who they are not, instead of all being working toward a common goal. People define themselves on the back of those around them by comparing or contrasting themselves with them, and this is a problem. Because when we determine who we are against other people, life is made into this competition where nobody wins. Think about that question. Who are you? Who are you? Where would you begin? Would you begin by saying who you are not? Who you don't know? The stuff you haven't accomplished? Stuff that isn't in your history or something else? All negative? Or would you begin by who you really are? Jesus invites his followers, and not just the ones from 2,000 some years ago, but each of us to think about who we are differently. Who we are. And I think he's saying we need to recognize that our identity comes from God, not from comparing ourselves or contrasting ourselves with others. It comes from God. And we are each unique as children of God. Like this guy who's casting out demons in the name of Jesus, his identity comes from something else, not by his closeness to him. Jesus says, in a way, there's enough opportunity for love, for care, and welcome for everyone. Not just those that are immediately closest to him. I think this is a word of hope for us as believers of all different stripes and backgrounds, and questioners and skeptics and doubters and whoever. Because we aren't that group of 12. We're living in the 21st century, 2,000 some years later, after the Lord walked this earth. And there's still enough opportunity for love and care and welcome for the other in his name. Ultimately, Jesus doesn't talk about hell as maybe the thesis statement of what he's sharing about, and he gets into the weeds. talking in some really graphic language, and I intentionally chose to use Eugene Peterson's Message translation of the Bible so that it hits us in our modern ears a little differently. He talks about all these body parts that you need to lop off if they cause you to sin, to miss the mark, to go down the wrong path, and what it would be better to lose and live than enter hell with. And those are hard words to hear. But I think Jesus concludes by talking about salt. Salt. And this salt piece is crucial because I think it ties back to identity. Salt is good. But if salt has lost its saltiness, how can you season it? You know, Eugene Peterson says, have preservative, be a preservative. Jesus says, have salt in yourselves. Be at peace with one another. When you think about table salt, what good is it if it loses its saltiness? Like I told the kids, you know, salt is good for a lot of things, but if it's just sitting in some lazy Susan somewhere or on your shelf or out in the garage or wherever, it's not good for much. And if you let it just sit there, it loses its flavor and its potency. You can't eat it by itself either, unless you want to become gravely ill, like I was a couple weeks ago. Salt needs to be mixed together with other things, or else it is poisonous by itself. And when you mix it together with other things, like our brilliant kids mentioned, it enriches them. It makes bland things taste good. It makes them taste salty. It enriches them. It draws out flavors in things. But it also has the power to draw out sickness. It enlivens. It makes things better. It brings new life to that which is in some ways empty and bland. But put too much on something and you wreck it. Put the right amount on it and you make it great. Think about the disciples now saying, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name. We tried to stop him because he wasn't following us." When Jesus says salt is good, what good is flavorless salt? Have salt in yourself, be at peace with one another. It's like he's saying, you, as my followers, are the salt of the earth, the spice of life, and you need to get out there and salt up other people's lives, other people who aren't us, other people who might not think, we might not think of as a part of us, or other people we might not want to associate with. Like this guy who's casting out the demons. Enrich, enliven, draw out the gifts for God's kingdom. I think Jesus challenges and invites us with this identity piece to have peace in ourselves for who we are, not who we are not against someone else. To not define ourselves by what somebody else thinks or what somebody else is doing or how we're different than them, for better or for worse. But ultimately, he invites us to be so confident in who we are as his followers that we can draw out the gift of life in others rather than defining ourselves against them or closing ourselves off to them. Have salt in yourselves. Have peace in one another, he says. So again, I want to leave you with that question. Who are you? Who are you? How would you start? Describe who you are to somebody else. How would you arrive at the end of your story? Maybe think about that this week. Who am I? Because our scripture lesson today, I think, invites us to ponder the question of identity. Instead of getting our identity by disassociating ourselves from others, like the kids who didn't want to get caught participating in that bear jar thing. Jesus challenges us to get our identity by following in his footsteps, not by comparing or contrasting ourselves to other people. By doing small, courageous acts of welcome for the other, by avoiding vices and pitfalls, and by being the salt that enhances life for others, enriching, drawing out gifts, and making life better.